Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to Shop Talk Show. We have just a lovely episode in store for you. We only have one sponsor this week, just through my own finger fumbling. I kind of screwed that up, but it's Environments for Humans, our favorite, best, longtime sponsor, promoting their CSS Summit. That's CSSSummit.com. It's one of the best online CSS, and they call it an SAS event because that seems to be the preprocessor that gets talked about the most. But it's a three-day, you know, one of their like main hardcore online conferences where you can just focus on leveling up your CSS knowledge and ability for three full days. It's coming up July 7th, 8th, and 9th with speakers that are on the core SaaS team. They work for Adobe, they work for Google, they work for IBM, they work for Sparkbox, all big kind of names in the industry talking about CSS and all the tangential stuff around CSS. Can't wait for that. Go check out CSSSummit.com. But for now, let's kick things off with our new theme song.
Hey there, Shopomaniacs. Still getting used to that new theme song. I really like it. It is growing on me. I'm Dave Rupert. With me is Chris Coyer.
Yeah! And guess what? It's just me and you today. Dave, it is a rapid fire episode.
Bazooka.
In which, you know the drill, folks. This is our 46th rapid fire episode and our 170th episode. How many? What is this? It's June. You know what? We're not going to hit 200 this year, I don't think. But it'll be early next year when we hit 200.
Early next year.
Yeah. And you know what? I just emailed Dave, actually. I haven't heard back. So I have no idea if he even read it yet. But I have all these ideas for new shows to do. I know Dave's got some ideas, too. But it's going to be fun. We're trying to, like, stick to the classic formats, but then just have more specials. Just so there's more reason for you to, like, be excited when a new Shop Talk show hits the thing. Because you never know what you're going to get. It's going to get weird.
It's Shop Talk Classic with some new formulas applied. I think it should be fun. We're looking forward. We're still brewing that, yep. And still again, yeah. We're changing things up. It's good, keeping it fresh. We washed that old shirt, the old lucky shirt,
right?
And
I guess the thinking is that like there's a, you know, we already try to avoid the FAQ questions. But, you know, once in a while, those creep in and whatever. And I just don't want every single show. I mean, when you're at episode 170, I don't want every show to feel like the same show. I want it to feel fresh and interesting and keep y'all listening out there. So this is a rapid fire show. We're going to do as many Q&A things as we possibly can. So let's dig into it a little bit here. I have Mr. Jonathan Bell writes in Dear Shop Talk. I've noticed that in recent years, more and more, Google is doing a good job of cementing a consistent look and feel across all of its products. I was wondering, do you guys think that we would ever see Google put out a CSS framework from Google with, you know, maybe a little JavaScript in there? Is there such a framework already that I just don't know about? My understanding is that Twitter created Bootstrap for a consistent look and feel across its products. So it makes sense that one might exist at Google. I really like the way Google is going and wouldn't mind scoring some of that sweetness. It's true. We had Mark Otto on the show, and he worked at Twitter when he first created Bootstrap. And so it did originally go there. It's no longer Twitter Bootstrap, but just Bootstrap, because Mark kind of took it with him when he left Twitter. But yeah, it was designed to help internal projects at Twitter. I'm not sure. I don't know how much of it ever got used on Twitter.com stuff, but maybe some. I don't know. And you're right. It is no small task to unify the look and feel and stuff of can you imagine trying to do that across all of Google projects? And I think that you're right in that, like, not only is that amazing, but there is actually, I don't know if you'd call it a framework, but there's a thing. And Google calls it material design. And I believe you can go to design.google.com or maybe google.com/design. Let me verify which one it is. Anyway, yeah, it's google.com/design, and they have a whole page about it. In fact, they've kind of revamped it a number of times now, and it just super recently was redesigned, and it looks great. It is amazing. And they talk about this stuff. The first link on the page as I look at it right now says Making Material Design, and it says a behind-the-scenes look at building Google's visual, wait for it, framework. So they call it a framework. They think of it as a framework. They talk about it as a framework. So yes, it exists, although I don't think it's as simple as Bootstrap. I don't think they give you, fork this project on GitHub kind of stuff. It's more of a philosophy. It's more of a, these are the ideals and principles behind it. I don't think it's like just put this class name on this div structure and get it. Isn't that right? Or is it like that?
They don't have that exactly. There is a thing called materialize.
Sure. So other people have taken these concepts and made them into a framework.
Yeah. The only thing that gets close, right, is Polymer, which is another Google property tangentially related. That's the idea of web components that these like almost drag and drop pieces of code can start building out complex applications on the front end. Like there is a Google login component and you just type in like Google login, open bracket, Google login, close bracket, and it shows up. So that's kind of like the future, I think, of where they're going. And I think if you like start using their stuff, you get a little bit of that style. It bites a little bit of that style, but I don't know. It's kind of I think they're more trying to keep that to like to be strictly their non Google. Like they want it to be the web component technology, not necessarily the this is how we look technology, I believe.
Yep.
Did I say that okay?
You did, and I think that's all there is to say about it, really. I think, Jonathan, you should know that this consistency that you're seeing across Google isn't random. It was a huge undertaking, and the place to learn more about it is google.com/design, and they call it material design, and just read up. There's lots to be said about it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then, yeah, check out, if you want to go to the next level, I'm going to do some synergy here, but check out the Rob Dodson episode where we talked about web components quite a lot and Polymer. And Polymer is kind of, might be what you're looking for if you just kind of want to piece together googly kind of things. So
could be,
they have like a paper plugin or whatever. Now they have like elements.polymer-project.org, and like you can browse their kind of, it's basically a pattern lab. It's like just little components that you like look at and you can demo them and you can read about the API and blah 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 and add them to a cart and download them. But paper elements is what you'd be wanting to look at. So because you can get like a paper button and download all the buttons. You can get paper behaviors, dialogue, checkboxes.
Okay, so blah, paper blah, blah. Is what they call the thing that we would think of as bootstrappy?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's the like, paper is like the, like this iteration of material design. But they also have like some, they use this elemental, like we really are overdoing the atomic web design analogies here, but they have like elements like iron. Those are the like strong elements. Paper is just this, you know, kind of loose, that's not an actual element, but like silicon, oxygen, phosphorus or something. I don't know. But anyway, analogies on the web. So
okay.
You feel it? Yeah, it's weird, but it's good. I don't know. I think they're trying to create a language, a design language, and if that helps them do it, good
right.
on you, mate.
Right. Whatever you feel about it, I think you got to kind of respect the what it must be like to try to rein in the design of that much.
Oh, I think it's freaking incredible. Did you see the Google I/O website this year, 2015 Google I/O?
Yeah, I saw it. I talked to him. I'm dying. Paul Lewis. Paul Lewis.
Oh, Paul Lewis.
Created it and talked all about it. And he talked, you know, there's some awesome tricks on there about how, you can imagine like a grid of squares, right? And then you click one of the squares and it kind of expands to fill the entire page. You probably have all seen that. It's a very material designy looking thing. Well, part of the majesty that he did was that the position of them when they're in the grid is actually like the opposite of how they normally are. Like that they're transformed to be in that position. And then when you like kind of click them to expand, they're like kind of like returning to their normal position. And I think there's like some performance benefits there. And he wrote all about the kind of the philosophy behind that and how you can do it with kind of using, Git client bounding box and stuff to figure out the math involved and for tweening between the two shapes. I'm sure I'm not doing this justice, but he's written about that at Paul Lewis's site. Anyway, we're beating this to death and in a rapid fire episode.
Hopefully that helps. Next question is
it probably won't play though because it's on record MP3. We've actually changed our MP3 recording source to some new little Austin startup, right, Dave? I forget.
Yeah, clipped it. It's kind of like a imager for audio, to my understanding. But let's see. I'm 50-50 here on. Let's just do the
yeah. No, I'll just read it. Version. Sure, or you can.
I got it. Luke Peters writes in, 8 months ago, I quit my job at a startup to freelance on my own. Congratulations, which has been going great. And just 6 weeks ago, two good friends quit their jobs to join me, forming a three-man web design development studio. Hey, so this question is for Dave in regards to your Paravel experience. Do you have any advice, insight, or just straight up ramblings about forming and working with a small team of friends, and how the three of you got Paravel to a point where you are doing work for high profile clients like Microsoft?
Pretty sweet, man. Luke actually Luke has already taken some steps to do this. So yeah, congratulations, like Dave said. And now how do you level up? It's probably just time, eh?
Yeah, it's time. I think the like classic work hard, be nice, get lucky sort of applies. I mean, we were very fortunate to meet people who liked us and recommended us for things as just snowballed into that. So, it's pretty cool. I think you have to, you have to meet people, shake hands, businessing. And be nice. Don't be a jerkwad.
There's a little bit of blogging involved. Trent has been blogging for a while, and they're really kind of beautiful blog posts. Nothing levels you up more than having a blog where you actually write stuff people read. I swear to God, it's like the number one thing you can do to get people doing that. And well, Dave, you do it too. And if you go to Regan's site, it's a beautifully put together site. Like all three of you have like really clear online proof that you know what you're doing.
Yeah, I think that was important for us too, is to establish like individuality, just in case things go belly up. you never know. We're also pretty conservative with the money bucks. And so we always like whenever a project came in, like let's say we made I think our first website was like $300, but let's skip forward a bit. One website, let's say we made $3,000. We put that in a bank and then like just shelled out agreed upon salaries and always kept I think this is a smart move. We always kept like money in the bank. We didn't just divide spoils by three. We always kind of lived for like money in the bank. Like let's be in business another week rather than just like dividing spoils. Like that seemed like a better decision for us. And, after a while that little doomsday fund grows and you don't need as much, and then you can cut checks, bonuses, and that's kind of nice. But, you just doomsday funds are kind of nice if you can structure yourself that way. Like you have to form a relationship, right? Like you don't, like Reagan, Trent and I have known each other since high school. So it's not like we are like we're in it for the long haul. We, you know, we're in it to like see each other's kids go to college.
That's, you have that in common with Luke here. It sounds like he convinced two good friends to quit. I did the same exact thing with Code for Pen. I didn't really, you know, I got them to quit their fancy jobs at SurveyMonkey to kind of come along and do this thing. So it sounds like all this trio of trios. Yeah. have that in common. And that's great. It really is a useful thing. If you can convince somebody that you know you already like and you know that you already get along and work together well, you probably will. I don't know. It's just such a thing, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you guys have had that experience. I mean, you all quit jobs to form a thing, you know?
Yeah, like, we didn't learn the really smart put the money in the bank thing. Still got to learn that one.
But, well, it's tough. I mean, you guys started out, you know, bootstrapped.
Well, we also have like some money that we can count on month to month because that's how these type of businesses go. Whereas that's a little different than an agency type of thing where, it's not necessarily month to month income, right? You have to continually get clients to make that happen.
Yeah. And there will be a lot of, you know, you're going to learn a lot of lessons, good clients, bad clients, all the way through. I mean, you just have to kind of like just be along for the ride. You'll probably early on say a lot of yes to everything. And then maybe later you can be a little more deciduous, you know, to projects. So it's like the long haul, right? Like you at CodePen, you guys are thinking about like, okay, how do we do this for the next 5 years? You know, not like, how do I get super rich this year? You know, although getting super rich in a year would be awesome. But like, you think about like 5 year stretches, you know.
Yeah, definitely. We're a long haul company. We have that thinking in mind. And I guess if you're asking for advice, Luke, that would be the advice that we would give is to have that kind of thinking. I mean, you're starting a studio here. There's no such thing as a studio that does the, you know, like gets funding and has an exit in 2 years, ain't going to happen. Have that long-term thinking in mind will serve you well, I think. Make choices based on longevity, you know, no bridge burning, fiscal responsibility, lawyering up, all the good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully that helped you, Luke. You feel free to hit me up on Twitter. I can talk more, but then again, like totally take that with a grain of salt because like every business is different. Every, you know, like
probably even geographically like, different.
Yeah. And like personalities and stuff like that. So, that all plays a part too. So, I'm always leery of others' business advice, but I don't know. I think saving money was smart. That's my like summation of our business strategy, you know.
Yeah, heck yeah. Let's do a sponsor quick. I have CSS Summit to talk about here. It's an Environments for Humans online conference. It's a 3-day banger. I recommend buying tickets for all 3 days, but you could, if you knew that you had to be absolutely gone for one of those days, buy individual tickets if you want to. Go to csssummit.com to do that. Click the buy tickets button. Use coupon code SHOPTALKSHOW, which will get you 20% off whatever you buy. So that's kind of good to know. And it's, you know, it's all about CSS, but it's about the world that is around CSS too. So it's pretty focused, but of course there's stuff about SVG too. We got, Miss Sarah Drasner. We should get her on the show. She's great. Really does awesome stuff on CodePen to, Zerato. Writing about SVG. She's talking about SVG sprites for animation. God, I wish I was at that. There's two other SVG talks, you know, there's stuff about, how CSS fits in with the world of Angular. There's stuff about SAS, of course. Lots of stuff about SAS. Tab Atkins is going to be there, and it says the talk is to be announced, which is exciting to me because it's always like exciting to know what Tab is going to talk about because, you know, he's like works at Google but works really for the W3C on future CSS stuff. So whenever he talks about CSS, it's usually like jaws to the floor, like, oh, my God, that's what's coming to CSS? That's crazy.
CSS 9.
Yeah. So that'll be pretty fantastic. Anyway, it's a virtual conference. When you pay and you attended it, your login that gets you into the conference, you just kind of have, and that after the summit is over, it turns into, instead of this live room, it turns into here's all the people that talked, and you can basically like replay the day in real time. You know, like you see the talk again, you see the chat room again, you just go back to that place. It's like locked in time for you to re-explore, which is just super cool.
I did that with the accessibility summit they do. Mm-hmm. And I went back and I was like, I have to watch like all of these again, because, you know, somebody will just slip in a detail and on a, like a slide and just thumb through, you know, and you're just like, wait. I got to ponder that.
So. I kind of like, you know, it's like some people listen to music while you work. Alternatively, you could sit and listen to a conference while you were not only live, but later too, you know?
Yeah, no, totally.
So. And if you got to miss a minute, big deal. I got it. I can just return back in through time to see that part again. Anyway, mm-hmm. Pretty cool. Use coupon code ShopTalkShow for 20% off CSSSummit.com. Let me read one here from, or do you got something to say?
Nope.
Oh, that was like an inhale. You know, I can.
I was going to steal the question from you, but you go. You go.
Robbie.
You're probably. I almost said Robbie too.
Why? Rob. I'm sorry, Mr. Gilbert. I am relatively new to front end design and development. I've recently had my eyes open to the world of pre processing, etc. I've dabbled with using Mixture. We haven't talked about that in a while. Mixture.io. You remember that thing? Mixture. And now I'm thinking about gulping it up. Can you summarize the pros and cons of Gulp Grunt versus something like Mixture CodeKit? Mixture is certainly in the CodeKit kind of market. So I guess let's just leave it at that for a moment in this question. So I think there's probably a lot of people in this world that they hear about Grunt, they hear about Gulp. In fact, you know, we've talked about it enough that I just basically, we can't do any more Gulp versus Grunt, but there's got to be 5 questions in our bank here that are just like, could you please talk about the pros and cons of Gulp versus Grunt? Not that that's a bad question. I didn't mean to make that sound bad, but it's like, I don't know, that's kind of been beaten to death. But the point is they're both task runners. They both can do similar kind of thing. It's kind of like code versus configuration kind of thing. That's about all you need to know possibly. But then as you compare that to something like CodeKit or something like Mixture, is Mixture even around this?
It's still up. So.
Oh, there it is. It just didn't resolve for a second for me. Is like software that you run that's like native to your computer. Like there's an icon in the dock for it, you know? Mixture runs on Windows too. So I said the dock being all Mac specific, but Mixture runs on Windows as well. And they have like a whole UI. But the reason that people kind of think of them as so similar is that they end up doing the same type of jobs. So if you need your SAS compiled, Gulp can do that, Grunt can do that, Mixture can do that, CodeKit can do that. All of those things can do that. There's even more things that can do that. There's tons of things that will compile your SAS for you. So what one do you pick, really? And there's plenty to be said about this. It's actually kind of ripe for a blog post, probably, although there's probably been plenty written about it, but it would be interesting to write it from the perspective of you, Rob. Like, you're trying to decide which ones of these to pick. I would say that, like, so I'll just describe me, because, you know, that's the easiest thing for anybody to do. When I'm just working on a project and I know it's pretty much going to be all by myself, I am more than happy to use CodeKit, because I have a folder, I drag that folder on top of CodeKit, and it just does intelligent things. It's like, oh, I see, there's some files in this here that end in .scss. I know exactly what you want to do with that. Whenever I hit, it's just going to watch those files automatically. As soon as I hit save, it's going to process them into CSS. If I don't like where it did that, I can configure it to move those files somewhere else when it does that. And it can do a handful of other things too. It can, it has its own little HTML language. It can optimize your images. It can compress your JavaScript and combine it with other JavaScript if you want to. CodeKit is great, but those are the things that it does. If you want CodeKit to do something that isn't one of the features that it can do, it's kind of like too bad. I know it has some kind of post-commit hook stuff kind of built into it, or it's trying to, it grows up, but it's kind of like, it just does what it does. Mixture just does what it does too, but Mixture has some additional features. I think there's some kind of deployment thing built into Mixture, and it has its own little HTML language that you can write in. These are software that just do what they do. Gulp and Grunt are more like down to the metal than that. You can tell Gulp to kind of do anything. Any code that you can execute in Node, right? You can just write and have Gulp execute. But there's things called plugins for both Grunt and Gulp. And they're, you know, like if you're going to use Gulp and you want to process your SAS, well, you download Gulp. You add the Gulp SAS plugin, whatever that is, and then you write a little code that tells it what to do, and then you kind of kick it off via the command line, and it does those things. But it's kind of unlimited what you can have Gulp do for you. It's just the sky is wide open there. You know, the CodeKit just kind of does what it does. Gulp can do anything. Is that a fair comparison?
Yeah, I always see Gulp as like build your own CodeKit for free. You know, it's going to take a little bit of JavaScript knowledge, obviously, but you end up with like a
it's free,
you
know, is a good point. Yeah.
And that's why I would recommend it for teams, you know, because you can just share a gulp file and you npm install things and then you just share a gulp file as opposed to like buying licenses out for
a
team of 20 developers or something. If you're thinking in big scale.
But it takes 2 seconds. Like you pull down the repo and all the configuration stuff there. You type npm install, you tell gulp go or whatever the heck the command is for gulp. Yeah. I don't use it all that much. And you're ready to go. It didn't cost anybody money. Everybody has a consistent environment. Now, you know, a CodeKit person might argue, well, there's actually CodeKit saves a configuration file in the repo too. So that works for everybody. But you know what I mean? It only runs on Macs, and it's like you have to make sure everybody has all the up-to-date versions of it, and it costs money.
And the next thing is because you're like building your own thing, like Gulp, you can configure Gulp to like upload to S3 every time you hit save on an HTML file or a CSS file. Like just every time you hit save, it just pushes it to S3. Beep, bop, bleep. Your S3 bill will be out of control, but it could do that. The kind of more relevant example is, you know, the pre-processing is cool, but you know what's cooler? Post-processing with like post-CSS or next-CSS. Like that's kind of coming up. And so maybe you want to switch over to post-processing because it's more future-friendly or something. Whatever you want, you know, however you want to justify it. CodeKit probably won't have post-processing till the next major version. So do you want to sit around and wait for that? Or, you know, what do you do there? But in Gulp, you can like start using it today. You could just, you know.
So Teams is one. Yeah, absolutely. That's a very good point. The another is that sometimes teams are more informal. Like if you're going to have a open source project, you don't necessarily know who's going to be on that team. You would definitely go with kind of a Grunt or Gulp setup just because it's like you want anybody to be able to jump in and use this. It would be CodeKit is too like weird of a dependency for an open source project, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We actually had like a weird CodeKit thing going on with a A11Y project, which is like anyone could commit. But then it was like clearly like, I think when it was like me and Dennis working on the CSS, it was like totally fine because we both had CodeKit, but then like it quickly got out of hand. So I think we had to like, yeah, we still have a CodeKit config from 2 years ago in there. So anyway, we quickly like moved away from that. And yeah, so that would be my thing. And that was kind of the second part of his question, right? I'm going to... Rob says, I'm going to have to sell this to my boss and team. We currently write full-blown CSS. Ooh, don't do that. And don't really do any minification. Ooh, don't do that. And seems like a no-brainer, but he's old school. Wish me luck. Good luck, Rob. So, I think like Oh no. I mean, you should convince your boss to get on something. There's a learning curve for SAS or post-processing or whatever, but like, man, like the like benefits of it are huge. So I've found, I mean, you step on less people's toes, you don't, you know, I don't know. You work in smaller, more modularized fashion, which is awesome for code isolation. So.
Yep.
All right. Next question. Let's call that one. Yeah. Pew, pew, pew. Guns. All right. Yi Yang writes in, I am an avid conference goer, and every now and then I get a chance to sit down with one or many conference speakers for a drink or lunch, etc. I know for me personally, I don't always like to talk about work or what I'm trying to do to relax and enjoy a drink or social event. So the question is, putting yourself in my shoes, if you, a John Jane Doe, are talking to someone like you, a person with esteem, I guess he means award-winning podcasters, I believe.
Podcast of the year, 2014. Yeah.
I think that's what he means. Award-winning podcasters. What should the topic of discussion be? What would you want to talk about? What we design devs do in our field, or would it be out of bounds to talk about more personal things like family, children, and other hobbies? If you mention it in a talk or discussion, is it fair to ask about those things?
Ooh, fair.
This is interesting. I think it depends on the person, but Chris, how do you?
I was like, this is a great question because it happens that we both go to a bunch of conferences and there's a million conversations that happen at them, and it's always, you know, what guides those conversations? I mean, we're all just people. You can talk about whatever you want, but it's true that I get a little like websited out at these things. Mm-hmm. It's just a lot of hours in a row of website stuff, and I'm just like, oh my god, I don't know if I want to talk about websites anymore for a minute, you know. So it would it pains me to know that somebody might come up to me and want to chat, or we're sitting together at lunch or at the bar or something, and they feel pressure to ask me about websites when even they don't want to. Because they think that's what I want to talk about? Oh, absolutely not. In fact, the chances of me wanting to talk about websites instead of something way more interesting like friends and family and hobbies and stuff, please talk about those things. That's way more interesting to me, probably. I love talking about websites, don't get me wrong. But at the bar at the end of the night, let's talk about anything else. Mm. To me, I don't know.
Yeah, no. I like talking about websites. I like talking. I like hearing what other people do. That's like part of the reason I go to conferences. Like, what are people's struggles? What do you know? I like to hear that sort of stuff because I don't know. I mean, I know everything about me. I don't want to talk about myself, so I'd rather hear about other people. So
oh sure.
So I think it's like, or like you said, like, let's talk about anything else. You know, there's a lot to talk about, you know, whether it's current events or, you know, like how do we like solve social problems in our industry? You know, like there's kind of like bigger conversations. I feel like you can get into good conversations, at the bar. I think there is, you know, I think it sounds like if you're asking this question, you have enough social couth, you know, social awareness that you aren't just like bombarding people. Like, I don't know. You don't like, it is inappropriate to walk up to somebody and, you know, say like, I don't know, what is your bra size? Or like, geez, you have a funny nose. That's weird, you know, to say to people. So you have to like, I don't know, just not do those things. Don't be a rando. I don't know how you say that, but yeah. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes. Please just talk about what's ever on your mind, you know, whatever's interesting to you, you know. Like, it feels like if you think that you're under pressure to come up with a CSS stumper for me, please don't do that.
Gotcha, journalism.
Anyway, that's a good question. I just feel like, yeah, I don't know. Just be yourself. That's a crappy answer, but you know, that's what I feel like. I mean, this is coming up. I'm going to San Diego for Event Apart super soon here, and they're doing the thing where they put the name of you at the table. Because they, you know, people that want us specifically to talk to you will sit at that table. Then I can't wait. It's going to be totally exciting. But I hope the conversation goes wherever.
Yeah, it's always more fun to get into conversations not explicitly about CSS or something like that. So it's fun. Yeah. All right. So. Thanks, Yi, for writing in.
Yeah.
Let's go to next question from Kushala Mandalia. I'm sorry, Kushala. How do you become a lifetime blogger like you, Chris? I just sometimes can't get inspiration to write an article.
Yeah, I thought this was another similarly interesting thing to talk about. Like, what's some kind of strategies for blogging? I sometimes honestly look up to Dave's blogging ability too. I know you think you suck at it, but Dave, whenever Dave does write, it's a big, powerful thought, and it tends to have some legs. Whereas I'm more of like just barf it out, write lots of stuff kind of guy usually. And CSS Tricks is changing too, with lots of, you know, guest authors and employee authors and stuff like that happening too. So that's not a different comparison. But if you're like talking about just, you know, what do I write? I'll just write about anything, you know?
Mm-hmm. There's two paths you can take is like the monthly blogger or the like almost daily blogger or weekly at least, right? I feel like if you're the weekly blogger, you're going to get more attention and more consistency, and people are going to rely on you. Who's a good example? Sarah Sweden is a really great example of this. She is like shipping knowledge weekly, you know, on a really, really good cadence. I am on the more monthly, bi-monthly schedule, and I'm okay with that. Like Chris said, I don't know. I just tend to overthink my blog posts. I have like, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I have like 10 draft posts right now. So I'm like sitting on blog posts for months or years. So, but that's, I think another part of being a good blogger is like Gary Vaynerchuk's Crush It book. Did you ever read that, Chris? He's like, find something you're interested in and try to write down 50 things you could talk about on that subject. Like, so like if you're going to want to become a blogger, try to write down 50 blog posts, like off the top of your head, like titles. And we kind of did that with this podcast. We were like, hey, Chris, let's do a podcast that'll have guests. Let's think of 50 people to invite to be on the show. And we like opened up an Excel sheet or a Google Doc and just like, boom, like spat out a big old list of people we wanted to have on the show. And we could kind of, you know, since we know who those people were, we could figure out what we'd want to talk to them about. So, I mean, I think that's like a part of it too, is like, if you want to ship content regularly, you have to come up with a content, you know, you have to come up with content titles that you are going to push out. And then you just got to be religious or have a really good cadence, a really good kind of schedule. I mean, Shop Talk is weekly, right? We are recording this before so that we have a episode that week, you know. We don't just let it die on the vine. We make sure that we show up every week, right? So
yeah,
those would be my pointers. And you've probably seen that too, right? In your traffic stats, like if you let blogging slip, well, your traffic slips and then traffic disappears. So that's right? That's kind of how it all works.
It does. I mean, it's less pronounced at CSS Strix because of the massive content there, you know, that it's like, you know, you could go a week and it probably isn't going to drop off, but it certainly would if it lasted over time. And it's not only because people stop coming, it's because Google, you know, it's like, I think you probably lose a little juice if the site looks neglected, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
yeah,
there's lots of things I do. I use group wise. I use a app called Stack. That's kind of it's a little bit like Trello, but I don't know. I just started using it and I like it and invited my team members to it. And we use it largely for anything really. But we have a couple of sections in there that are specifically blog posts and what like readiness state they're in. And each little card or whatever has ability to put notes in there and has a little comment thread and whatever. And so there's just a zillion ideas in there for blog posts with links and notes and conversation and stuff around it so that you can always kind of grab one of those cards and turn it into a blog post. So having a proliferation of ideas to work from, I think is good for blogging. I have a personal list too. I have draft posts in WordPress. I'm a little unorganized about it, but there's definitely no shortage of ideas. Like to me, blogging is important, and I just need to be like, okay, the next 2 hours, I'm getting a post out, period. Let me just grab one of these and do it. It's not a matter of like, I don't have anything to say. You got plenty of stuff to write mm-hmm. about.
You just don't have like, you just need the discipline, the carved out time to say, I'm doing it.
It's a time situation. Now, here's another important one. So, okay, in the list of ideas too, it should be more than just a couple of words. I find that is problematic for me in the past. I've written down just tiny little pieces of ideas, and it's not enough to reignite that into a blog post. So, but at the time when I wrote it down, there probably was some kind of spark there. There was something that was making me excited about that concept. I should have taken the time to write down more. I should have write down enough to get the spark back, you know? So not just a word, not just a sentence, maybe even write the first paragraph, maybe put a bunch of links there, that type of thing. That's pretty good. Another one I should say is that there's not enough blogs that I think are link blogs, really, that are kind of, that are like, put a link, write a couple sentences about what you think and do it. That's a lot easier than big idea blogging. And there's not enough of it, I feel like. I don't know. I'm trying to not necessarily bring it back. I'm not the master of it. But I think that's a perfectly legit blog post is a link to somebody else's thing, maybe a key quote from it, and then what you think about it, good or bad or whatever.
I mean, that's the Daring Fireball model. And
it sure
Gruber's
is. And
it's doing pretty good.
He's amazing at it. You don't have to be as good as he is at it, you know?
But you get there. That's the thing too. Is your writing starting out, it'll be bad. It'll have bad grammar. It's not going to be great, but you're going to pick it up. I mean, over time. So all it takes is one grammar Nazi to show up on your comment thread, and oh boy, howdy, do you learn how to spell check? That's all it takes. So, yeah. All right. Cool. Well,
good luck. Be a lifetime blogger. All good things come through writing. So this is probably about the time in the show that we would do another sponsor, but I just kind of screwed that up this week for somehow, and I don't have one. But I could, you know, neither of me or Dave do this for a full time job. So Dave is, you know, works at Paravel, and they do stuff. I get the impression that they're not always looking after. You know, Dave never gives the pitch like, hey, hire us for stuff. I think it's probably...
We're doing okay.
Yeah.
But there's... you can always fill out that thing. I would say, so we are... This is a spoiler. Shop Talk spoiler. Can we do that?
Yep.
Okay. So we're working on... I'm going to...
Oh, my God. Are you going to do it? You said you weren't going to do it. Hey, you're going to do it.
I'm not going to do it. I'm just... Everyone, come in. Bring it in. Okay. So we're working on an app, and it's going to be really cool. I'm really excited about it. It's called Day Trip. And anyway, that's, I've said too much. We'll talk about it more, I'm sure. But it's cool. I've been developing in Rails. It's a lot of fun. It's it's cool. So it's going to be a little fun little app for you. It's going to start out Austin only from the beginning. So that's kind of exciting too, right? So it's, we're being very selfish. We're saying, we're going to just roll out to Austin. But if things go well and there's enough demand, we'll look at expanding everything. So that's very exciting. So anyway,
it's like the Beatles song.
Yeah. Well, except totally not like it because I don't want them to sue me.
Yeah. It's very different.
Very different. Way different IP. So no, it's very exciting. And then you work on CodePen.
Yeah, true. So CodePen. Anyway, just make sure you follow Dave and Paravel and stuff. This show is basically brought to you by the fact that we can ditch out from our jobs and do that kind of thing. So, you know, when Dave releases a product, God dang it, we should mention it on the show. And that was just the whisper version, but we'll do a full-on pitch for it at another point. Yeah, and I work on CodePen, which I would love all of Shop Talk supports, or Shop Talk listeners' support on. You know, I work on it all day, every day. It is my big project, you know, so it's codepen.io. Probably most of you know all about it, but if you don't, go check it out. The primary way that we make money is through members of CodePen. So we give away most of it for free, but there's a couple of pro features, like, for example, being able to work on a pen and make it private. We just kind of drew the line and said that's a pro feature. So if you want to do things that you do privately, and people quit all the time and are, you know, that are unhappy that we make that a pro feature or whatever. And it's like, fine, you can be mad about that. You get to have that as an opinion if you'd like, but it's the thing that makes CodePen work. If we got rid of that and you got your way and that wasn't a pro feature, then we pretty much got to shut down because we wouldn't make any money and we couldn't pay, you know, it wouldn't be worth us making a product unless we have pro members. So I know that if that's not enough to get you to go pro, I totally understand. There's other features as well. There's a good dozen of them. Where just today we thought of a really interesting one that we can do. And a lot of times we'll think of a new feature in the context of, can we give away some of this and to benefit free users, and can we also have some advanced version of it that we can make pro? And I think we nailed one today as an idea, and I can't even give you a whisper thing on it because it'll probably take us a little while to get done. But we have some really good ideas that are going to really kind of up CodePen's game over time, and they're all going to get done, and you know, they'll get done if we get pro subscribers to help us get there. So anyway, that's that. And you've heard me talk about CodePen before. We also have a job board on there. That's another way that we make money. It also happens to be the Shop Talk job board. We just kind of combined those two things, and between the viewers that you get on it being the CSS Trip job board and the CodePen job board and the Shop Talk job board, it has some pretty good coverage. So if your company has a job that they want to post to reach all of the audiences of those sites, in which we're trying to do as good of a job as we can as getting people looking for jobs to those sites, go post your job on there. So that's our second sponsor of the day.
Yeah. Well, us. We sponsored our own show. Yeah. Deal with it. Sunglasses.
Sure, and if you want to buy us a future sponsorship shot on the show, we did move over to Syndicate Ads. That just kind of helps us manage that. So I can throw a link in there. But I think they're great. They help us kind of manage it, just to take a little bit off our plate so we can, for example, build those features a little faster.
Yeah. Nope. And keep the show afloat. I mean, we got a bandwidth bill. So, all right. Next question comes from Katarina Hussein, writes in, what are your thoughts on using Jekyll instead of WordPress for websites where most of the updates will be something like a listing of events? This is a good, decent question.
I like it. What are your first thoughts on it?
So my first thought is, if the listing of events is very, very minimal, like one a year, Jekyll is awesome. Like Jekyll is very hands-on. Like you have to compile it, you have to upload it. You could maybe skirt some of that by using like GitHub's editor and compiler and all that stuff. But yeah, I, like that, yeah, you could use GitHub as a CMS, I guess. And so it would be totally just fine. You just have to fill out like a YAML file or something.
That's
like that.
That's the thing, though, don't you think, Dave? It's like, who's using this event site at the end? Who's entering this list of events? Is it you? Mm-hmm. And you're fine using either of these technologies and you just want to know what the technology is good for? Or is it... are you handing this off to somebody else? I mean, it's going to be, it's too hard to ask your average person to be like, okay, just make a new file. It's called, you know, put the date first and then dash and then the name of the event and then .md. That stands for markdown. Now save it to this specific folder. Okay, now open your command line and type Jekyll build. Like, that's just way too much to ask your average person. They'd have to learn Git just to get the thing published and stuff. Whereas, obviously, a site like WordPress, you know, here's your login and password. Go here and make a new event. The UI publishing experience is 100% different on those very, very different experiences on those two things. So I'm sure, theoretically, technology-wise, you could make the same site in both. But it really boils down to how do you add and manage those events.
Yeah, who is updating and how, I think is the big thing. So I would probably lean on WordPress because I think if you're, but if it's your event and your thing, man, I would just use Jekyll. Sure. I think that makes total sense. Yeah, this is, this is the question of the time. Do you go static or dynamic? You know, if you have like a inkling, like a creeper smell that your client is going to ask for like a blog and a contact form and all, you know, that's WordPress territory. But you could also get really clever. Can I take it to like the Mythbusters like super explosion version? You could create a Firebase database and have like a junk form that post to that Firebase database and then have your Jekyll website consume the Firebase URL.
Totally. And I would throw a little React in there too, just to,
yeah, just flip on React, Angular.
I mean, what's an event site if it's not real time, you know? So I would think that, some kind of node stack in there, Socket.io to talk to Firebase so that just in case anything changes in the database, it's live reflected in the DOM.
Yeah, and
that
you should
seems
get
like at a minimum. At a minimum.
Yeah. Put it on a Raspberry Pi.
Yeah, totally. So when a new event is posted, a little drone takes off and takes a picture of the Earth.
And types it in. Yeah.
That's what I would think would be necessary, you know? And probably a little redundancy too. So I would, you know, get a couple of different Amazon servers, maybe one just to archive the events over time.
That's good.
All right. Or just use WordPress. Tom Hughes writes in, I'm no expert in SEO, but I was wondering what are some of the best practices regarding meta tags? It seems nowadays some tags are redundant, like the keywords tag. What tags do you consider essential for your website? Do you bother with tags such as the author tag, who I should put there, the company, the developer? That's a good question. Do you bother with other tags like the social media tags, like open graph and Twitter cards, geo tags? What are your go-to tags when creating a website? Well, I guess that last line there, Tom, is the tough part. It's, you know, what kind of website? How are people using that website? You know, are your ideas of how people use that website matching up with how people are actually using that website? Is website the way to think of it? Because it probably depends page by page throughout the site. My experience on CodePen is that we use quite a few different meta tags. Now, you know, you started off talking about the keywords meta tag. That thing has long been useless. Mm-hmm. So that thing's gone. But long useful has been the meta, what is it, the description tag, which ends up typically being what's used for the little blurb of text in search engine results pages. So that one's pretty darn useful to have, right? So if there's some like user-generated content on that site, or it's a blog post that you generated, or there's a way that you can kind of sum up the content on that page in a nice way, having a meta description tag is great. It's great just for the user experience of when people search for your site in that particular page ends up in the search results, you might as well have that text be as good as it can be, because that's how you're going to kind of win their click in a sense. So that one's particularly important. Now there's these ones that you mentioned, Open Graph. Open Graph is useful for Facebook because it controls how it looks when people paste a link into share on Facebook. And we all know how huge Facebook can be. Who knows what people are sharing on there? Why not have that look as good as it can be? Well, you can can exert some control over that with Open Graph tags. You might as well. Does that mean every single page of your entire site needs Open Graph? Maybe not. Maybe it's just the blog post pages. Maybe, you know, maybe there's certain pages of the site that you can target and do specific things with Open Graph, but it's on a kind of, you know, only certain templates of your site really need those. Twitter has its own kind of set of ones, and you might as well do those too. You know, it's starting to be like, oh, look at all this junk on the page. But, you know, if it affects something that's like how your site is shared, I think that can be somewhat important. And I think the web has kind of noticed that there's starting to be a lot more meta tags. And, you know, and I think that's where the manifest, isn't there some kind of new thing coming along that is supported? It's like putting all this stuff in a file instead, a file that can be cached. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that's kind of smart. I don't know how well supported that is, but it's if you're starting to feel like, oh my God, look at all this crap in my head, you can start moving some of that stuff out into a manifest file. I think Google's kind of spearheading that one, so that'll take some Googling. But, oh, I know I just rambled on there. What do you have any thoughts on meta tag stuff?
You covered all of it, but I think like meta tags are probably like more important than the Open Graph tags specifically are probably more important than like the description tags and keyword tags, which don't do anything. Like how much of your traffic do you expect to be organic? Like I'm actually in here, like looking at my stats and how much is organic. And that means like from social networks or, oh, they have a whole social, but like, my social traffic is like 10% of my or referral is 24%. That's probably all from Twitter. So it's like, you know, 30-40% of my traffic is from social networks. So it's like, man, that's really important stuff. So
I'll say, yeah.
Like, you want those Open Graph tags because or else you're missing out possibly. And that plays into other things. It's like, you know how those like Twitter card feeds, you know, they'll show an image or whatever. And it's like, you know, automatically an image from your blog post or whatever. That's Twitter Open Graph sort of stuff. And those get more clicks, but I don't necessarily like it. But the fact is, if you're trying to drive traffic, that they get more clicks. So I don't know. Because people aren't literate anymore. People don't read. They click pictures. Welcome to the internet in the year 2015.
Thanks, BuzzFeed.
Thanks, Buzz.
Oh, we love you. You guys do a good job.
If you want to acquire a Shop Talk Show, we're super into it. I'm just kidding. All right, next question.
Sasha. Moser. I've got a quick question about accessibility, more precisely about the ARIA role attributes. So I've been using them in projects for a while now, but only really for the main header or navigation. So I guess that being like role equals navigation or role.
And role equals banner.
Banner.
Yeah.
So my question is, can you only use one role? Can you use one role multiple times on a page, for example, for sub-navigation? What would you recommend in terms of quantity? So what would be a good amount of roles between none and way too many? Because I can imagine people using a screen reader getting annoyed by too many roles. So that's weird, right? Because you're just speculating, Sasha, and I don't know either. So it's weird to like kind of it seems like assumptions are a little rough to make in terms of accessibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like you don't want to just assume things. This is why like being able to navigate with a screen reader is kind of helpful. Like it might be something you want to learn how to do yourself. We have, you said you only use some, and that's super cool. But like, if a person navigates with Aria landmarks and you're only giving some,
yeah, they haven't can't I heard that that's whole page. I've heard that that's worse than not using. You know, it's like don't do that. That's worse.
It's not quite an anti-pattern, but it's just it's not helpful. You know, like if it would be like if I gave you a table of contents and I was like, skip to chapter one, skip to chapter two, and then there's 100 chapters in the book, and you're like, yeah, but I can't help you with the rest of that stuff. So it's almost like the content is invisible to the screen reader, right? So like, if you look at the landmarks, you're like, oh, this only has two chunks of content. You know, that's not enough. This page must be broken, or this page must not have any content. Or, you know, the ones we recommend from the a11yproject.com/post/aria-landmark-roles, banner for your header, like your global site header, search for your search form, role equals search, form for a group of elements that that assemble a form. You know, this isn't really awesome, but you know, you might do that if you have some really weird table that acts like a form or something like that. Main would be the main content area of your site. Think of that as like skip navigation. It doesn't replace skip navigation, but it's like that. It's like they can just use the landmark role just to get straight to navigation. To the main navigation for any navigation list. Usually that's like your header nav, your, you know, maybe pagination would be a good example. Maybe like related posts could be an example. But it's sort of, that's sort of like up to you whether that's actual navigation. And then content info for the footer of your page, like of the parent document. That will be like, that's said as like that's a very common thing. Like that's information about the content that explains the page to the reader. So yeah, hopefully that helps. It's kind of hard to like hear, you know, through audio an explanation of how to apply these roles, but, hopefully that kind of makes sense. It's really interesting. I think the best visualization, there's a few like charts and graphs, but the best visualization is when you actually like, you like enable it on your phone on iOS devices, and then you like use two fingers to rotate and you can like navigate by landmarks. And it's really interesting that how you can do that. So anyway, it's worth looking into, to learn how this technology works and worth learning how a screen reader works, just being proficient in one, just so you have an idea of how things kind of start working. But all screen readers are different. All OSs are different. All browsers are different. So that's also something to consider.
All right. Good stuff. We have one quick last one. We might as well do it because it's the last one of all the questions I picked out, which gives me pride that I can pick the correct number of questions for a rapid fire.
Spot on.
You got it. Daniel Vargas. You want to do it?
Oh, yeah. Daniel Vargas writes in. Daniel Vargas. I was trying to think of how to implement a page loading progress bar, kind of like on the one on YouTube, along with loading pages with Ajax for smoothing the UI. Do you guys have any resources for synchronizing these two things? Thanks.
This is tough. I'm sure a lot of people have thought of this over time. Or imagine you're building some kind of uploading tool or something, and you want to have a progress bar that shows how quickly that file is being uploaded, or a download tool as well. Like, how do you visually show that kind of progress? And it turns out it's like not easy. There needs to be some kind of communication between the server and the front end that kind of reports back on that progress. And that's not a built-in thing. There's no like default web APIs for that kind of thing. Even with like, you know, the file APIs and stuff that's available in kind of HTML5, when that file starts going up to the server, there's no like built-in functionality for like, okay, well, how much of it do you got up there, server? oh, 50%. Okay, I'll make the progress bar show 50%. Like, you can get it done, but there's no, like, it doesn't, there, none, you don't get any of that stuff for free. You know? So, like, I don't know what to tell you. There's, I'm sure it's been done again and again. There's probably libraries and stuff that you can look at. That's probably a pretty Googleable thing, but just know that what you're looking for is a, it's like a whole thing. It's not easy, and your server is definitely going to have to be involved. It needs to be set up to kind of to be smart and have some kind of system for reporting back how long an upload or download is taking and what percentage it thinks is done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you need to know, like, you're like, okay, get me this. Okay, how much have you received? How much does it take? Okay, good. I mean, like, JavaScript MVC frameworks do like a loading thing.
Well, so a spinner is one thing, but that's not telling you how much,
like,
done
how far
it is.
That page is. Yeah.
Right.
Like they're just saying, but I wonder if there is some of that. I wonder if that capability exists. I don't know.
Yeah, there's probably various ways to fake it, a front end too. Can you be like, okay, how many resources do I know that this page loads? I'm going to watch for kind of some kind of DOM loaded event and just increment the progress bar forward a certain percentage based on each one of them that I see that fires. You know, that's cool. That's kind of like faking it, but that's right. Or you could just totally fake it. Just have a CSS animation that just starts filling a progress bar arbitrarily, and hopefully it doesn't get, you know, get really slow towards the end, so it always kind of, you know, looks like it's never quite getting there or whatever. I mean, certainly faking it, isn't it? Or just have an indeterminate spinner or indeterminate progress bar be the UI, you know? Does it absolutely need to be 100% accurate?
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, I don't know.
Can you fake it till you make it? You used to be able to do it in Flash, and it used to be very like,
yeah,
oh, yes, like this exists, you know, but I don't know. I don't know if it's, I don't know. I would just rely on the browser's version.
Maybe there'll be an API for that someday on the browser that can, you know, the browser is capable of telling you how far along it's, how, you know, how long it expects to be done, I would think. But there's definitely no APIs for it.
I think the best response is to make your website so fast there is no loader. Hey-o.
Nice. Well said, whoa. Dave. That's the perfect way to end the show, I think.
Set a high bar. Hey. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Shop Talk Show, a podcast all about front-end web design and development. If you enjoyed this show, please rate us up in your podcatcher of choice, or follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show. If you hate your job, go get a job over at shoptalkshow.com/jobs. And people want to hire you, and they like you. They want to affirm your hardworkingness. And Chris, you got anything else?
Shoptalkshow.com.